This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Ahead on the program, much of the money to maintain Maine's roads, bridges, and airports comes from the U.S. government, but that money is set to run out at the end of the month. We'll also have an update on the University of Maine system's plans for its future. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Maine State Police say Anthony Lord has admitted to killing two people, wounding three, and kidnapping one woman in northern Maine last Friday. The 35-year-old appeared in Aroostook Superior Court today. As Patty White reports, he faces two counts of murder and one count of kidnapping.
Lord's crime spree began in the early hours of Friday morning, according to Maine State Police. He went to 55-year-old Kimberly Irish's residence, where he fired multiple shots, wounding Irish and killing 22-year-old Kyle Hewitt. 21-year-old Brittany Irish fled through a bathroom window and tried to escape on a passing truck, but Lord shot at the driver, grabbed the young woman, and took her in another vehicle. He later encountered two men at a woodyard, killing one of them and wounding the other. That afternoon, police found Lord at his uncle's residence in Holton, along with Brittany Irish. Lord is charged with two counts of murder and one count of kidnapping. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
The state Supreme Court is fast-tracking Governor Paul LePage's questions on the validity of the vetoes that he sent to lawmakers last week. The high court's inviting anyone with an interest to file comments by Friday afternoon. Responses to the first set of comments are due by noon on Wednesday the 29th, with oral arguments before the justices scheduled on the 31st at 9 a.m. If the past is any indication, it will be sometime in August when the court issues its opinion. And the Maine Republican Party is moving Governor LePage's chief legislative goal forward by proposing the phase-out of the state income tax to Maine voters through a citizens' initiative. During a weekend meeting of the state GOP committee, leaders authorized state party chairman Rick Bennett to undertake the effort with the goal of getting the question on the ballot next year after Democrats scuttled LePage's bill. Bennett says the loss to the state of about $1.5 billion in income tax revenue can be offset.
If you phase out the income tax over time and end it on a date certain, I think the combination of economic growth that ensues plus exercising some fiscal discipline and not even necessarily draconian cuts to state government, but rather just putting a lid on the spending increases can make up the $1.5 billion shortfall.
The question would also seek voter approval for tougher welfare reform. In weather tonight, showers ending with cloudy skies in the north and mostly clear skies in the rest of the state. Low temperatures tonight in the high 50s to low 60s. This is MPBN Radio. You can find us on the web at mpbn.net. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. A report published by the U.S. Naval Institute's news service says delays in the Zumwalt destroyer program have led to a bottleneck in production at Bath Iron Works. And the report says that's affecting the Midcoast shipyard's competitiveness as it pursues other Navy shipbuilding programs. Tom Porter has more.
Sam Lagrone, editor of the U.S. Naval Institute's news service, says BIW has become less competitive over the last few years.
The numbers pretty much speak for themselves.
In 2011, Lagrone says BIW bested its rival shipyard, run by Huntington Ingalls in Pascagoula, Mississippi, in the bid to construct three DDG-51 Arleigh Burke-class destroyers for the U.S. Navy. BIW's price per hull bid was nearly $20 million cheaper than what the Pascagoula yard could offer. 2 years later, it's a different story. BIW's price per hull had risen by more than $30 million, while Huntington Ingalls had fallen. Lagrone says it's an unusual turn in the Navy shipbuilding world.
Usually, if you have a multi-year ship construction, you'll know more well in advance, you know, what the long lead materials are going to be. You can be a little bit more competitive, as far as buying in bulk and buying your materials in bulk. And also you have what they call a learning curve with the ships.
And the stakes are high. The Mississippi shipyard emerged the clear winner in a $6 billion multi-year shipbuilding deal, winning contracts for five out of the nine Arleigh Burke destroyers in 2013. One factor contributing to the problems at BIW, says Lagrone, is connected to the $22 billion contract awarded 6 years ago to build three next-generation Zumwalt-class guided missile destroyers, known as DDG-1000s. The first ship is due for completion by the end of the year, several months behind its original schedule. Lagrone says the ship's integrated power system, completely unique to the Zumwalt, is designed to give vessels more flexibility and more efficiency. But
the problem is the system is completely complex and it's so new and it's so complicated that There's been some teething problems.
Teething problems which appear to have impacted the workflow of the shipyard, says Legrone. On top of that, he adds, he's heard concerns raised about a shortage of certain skilled workers.
One thing that, you know, from the people that we've talked to that's come up again and again is electricians and the lack of them, you know, in the yard in general has been a deciding factor for, delays in both lines of ships.
He points to the fact that two DDG-51 Arleigh Burke destroyers under construction at the yard, the Thomas Hudner and the Rafael Peralta, are experiencing delays of 5 and 7 months, respectively. Legrone says neither the Navy nor BIW specifically addressed the Arleigh Burke delays when he contacted them. However, both issued statements that pledged a commitment to increased efficiency in the construction of both the DDG-1000 and DDG-51 lines. Most members of Maine's congressional delegation responded to the recent article by expressing their faith in the BIW workforce. In a joint statement, Senators Angus King, an independent, and Republican Susan Collins admitted there are always technological challenges in building a first-of-its-kind ship like the Zumwalt. But they go on to say, quote, "The men and women of BIW have a long history of designing, building, and supporting the most advanced destroyers in the world," end quote, and that they're confident in their continued ability to do so. Second District Congressman Bruce Poliquin, a Republican, issued a similar statement. First District Democrat Shelley Pingree, however, declined to provide comment. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And you can hear more of Tom Porter's interview with Sam Legrone of the U.S. Naval Institute at news.mpbn.net. Nearly 40% of all the spending on transportation infrastructure in Maine, from roads and bridges to airports and ports, comes from the federal government. But if Congress doesn't act, that money runs out at the end of the month. Mal Leary spoke with the four members of Maine's congressional delegation about the funding battle now underway in Congress.
Last week, the House passed a short-term bill to fund transportation programs through December. The Senate has yet to consider a similar bill, but some members, including independent Angus King of Maine, are calling for a long-term funding plan instead of yet another stopgap.
I think that short-term fix is something like the 34th. It's getting kind of ridiculous to do this just for several months.
The transportation funding problem is well known on Capitol Hill. As vehicles become more fuel efficient and burn less gas, the fuel tax no longer brings in the cash needed to pay for all those roads and bridges that need repair and replacement. Both King and Senator Susan Collins would like to see a multi-year funding plan, but it's been difficult for Congress to agree on how to find the additional billions of dollars needed. Some Republicans have proposed lowering the rate of return on a federal employee retirement plan and using the savings to fund roads and bridges. Another proposal would divert dividends that the Federal Reserve Bank pays to member banks. Collins says she would support using the excise tax on vehicles.
One advantage of that approach is it gets to electric or hybrid vehicles who aren't paying their fair share if the only source of funding is the gas tax. Out in the Pacific Northwest, they're experimenting with a miles-driven approach.
Collins says she's opposed to simply raising the fuel tax to solve the funding problem, pointing out the current 18.4 cents a gallon tax would have to nearly double to bring in the needed revenue. But King does believe the fuel tax should be part of the solution, as does First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, who says it's consistent with the idea that the users of the highways should help pay for their upkeep.
This is nuts. I mean, we need money to fix roads and bridges. States need predictability in what kind of money is going to be coming to them.
But 2nd District Congressman Bruce Poliquin says he can't support raising the gas tax. Poliquin acknowledges the backlog of needed road and bridge projects across the country and in Maine and says he doesn't have the answer to the long-term problem. But he does support President Obama's proposal to put some money into transportation needs by restructuring tax rates on the offshore profits of large U.S. corporations.
Try to incent U.S. companies that have about $2 trillion in overseas profits for the operations they run in other countries, incent them to bring that money back to America.
Depending on the tax rate that is set in the legislation, that move could generate a one-time cash infusion of $100 billion. A six-year highway spending plan is projected to cost up to three times that. While the House has already passed its short-term measure, the Senate has a higher threshold, with 60 votes needed to take up any such proposals. So Collins and King acknowledge that the Senate may also, as King puts it, kick the can down the road yet again. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And finally today, University of Maine System trustees got an update today on an ambitious long-term plan to integrate, merge, and phase out some academic programs across the system's seven campuses. Officials leading the initiative say they are committed to consulting closely with faculty and students throughout the process. As Jay Field reports, trustees also learned the system's facing $16 million operating loss for the budget year that ended in June.
There were a few different reasons for the shortfall, system officials say, including the unpredictability of the stock market and costs associated with restructuring that's supposed to put the system on more sustainable financial footing for the long term. Dan DeMeritt is a spokesperson for the UMaine system.
As we close out the books for the last fiscal year, which ended June 30th, we have an operating loss of about $16 million. It's associated with some losses in one of our investment funds, some costs associated with retirement incentives as we downsize and adjust the size of the system, plus some severance expenses that the system incurred as part of a realignment at USM and elsewhere.
DeMeritt says the loss will be covered with money from the system's budget stabilization fund, money from individual campus reserves, and a drawdown of the system's insurance benefit pool will also be used. The current year's $518 million budget, notes DeMeritt, is balanced as of now, thanks to $7.2 million in emergency reserve funds. After hearing about the financials, UMaine System trustees gave some attention to the academic restructuring that's beginning to take place across the seven campuses. Trustees have already seen what can happen when programs are eliminated or restructured, and faculty and students feel like they haven't been heard. Trustee Sean Moody noted the experience at the University of Southern Maine.
I know that the situation we got in down at USM was very tenuous, and I think the two things that I grasped from that experience was the students and the faculty wanted more transparency and they wanted more predictability.
At the University of Southern Maine last year, students and faculty protested loudly and often after five programs were eliminated and 50 faculty positions were targeted for elimination. Those layoffs have been challenged by the Associated Faculties of Maine and are now before an arbitrator. The UMaine system administration cites years of flat funding from the state and declining enrollment as reasons why the seven campuses face an unsustainable financial future unless they dramatically cut costs. Under the One University initiative now underway, the campus presidents' councils are reviewing all academic programs to make sure they're financially sustainable and integral to a campus's mission. Dr. Ellen Chafee is running the so-called academic program review and integration process. Chafee says presidents' councils are also looking at what academic offerings set each campus apart.
By untangling the areas of internal competition and emphasizing areas of distinction campus by campus, that helped give us some guidance about where things might stay and why some things might stay, even if their financials are difficult.
Chafee says she's committed to making sure faculty across the system are kept in the loop as the academic review continues. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And at 13 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
The air encompassing Maine will dry out ever so slightly tonight. Any leftover showers will cease north and east of Millinocket while clouds linger. Fair weather clouds will vanish across the remainder of the state, upper 50s to low 60s, with valley fog towards dawn. Tomorrow will be a mostly cloudy day with afternoon showers throughout the county. For the rest of the state, morning sunshine, building afternoon clouds with showers and thunder late. Still quite sticky. Low 70s north to upper 80s south, a bit cooler at the beaches. Drier air will finally filter into Maine Wednesday behind a cool front. Sunshine limited north and west with a few afternoon showers and possible thunder. Bright morning sunshine for the rest of the state will be followed by a few afternoon showers over the interior. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday all nearly identical. It will be driest and brightest along the coast, Portland south. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to A.J. Higgins, Keith Shortall, Patty White, Ed Morin, and Barbara Caritti. I'm Nora Flaherty.